Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Molly Wheeler, and I will be introducing our speaker today. Allie Sadler will be hosting today's forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. Our speaker to start with will be Senator Patricia Jones. Senator Jones was the former Senate Minority Leader in the Utah State Legislature. She served in the Utah House of Representatives for 6 years and recently served in the Utah State Senate from 2006 to 2014. Pat Jones is the president and co-owner of Dan Jones & Associates, a thriving public opinion market research firm incorporated in 1980. Pat is also one of the top qualitative research and focus group moderators in the country. Her current role now is with the Women's Leadership Institute, where she serves as CEO. She's a very influential woman in our community, and we are very lucky to have her. Please join me in welcoming Pat Jones.
Well, I see many friends here, and thank you so much for showing up despite me as the speaker. I very much appreciate that. I kind of expected a small group of young women for some reason. And so I have it looks like a really interesting audience, and I'm just excited to share some information with you. I'd like this to be interactive. That's always the best way we learn, I think, is if we can ask questions and what's on our mind. Last night, I went to the sports mall, and I came home. My husband was watching a Chevy Chase movie. It was a movie about a European vacation, and I hadn't seen it before. But I was watching it, and I couldn't help but think how stupid women looked in that movie, you know. And then it had a piece in that had a young woman, or the son of Chevy Chase, and the actor was with this young woman who was in Germany, and she sheds her top and was bare-bosomed. And I just thought, you know what? That's what we're all exposed to nowadays. And I couldn't help but think how sad it is for women and men to have to put up with that. And so I'm going to just ask you some questions about how you feel women are portrayed in the media and in communities. You know, if we don't speak up and say something about this, then it's our own fault. So what can be done about that? Do you feel empowered at all? You men in the room, how does it hit you? What, you know, are you okay with that or not? I mean, how do you think women are portrayed? Yes, thank you.
On a larger media scale, women are portrayed to be more as a marketing tool. Sex sells, is what I typically see. They want me to watch a TV because of X. They want me to
do anything because they got an attractive woman associated with it.
Thank you. You know, I recently went to the Sundance Institute and saw the mask we wear about our young men and how they're growing up in a, you know, such a culture clash, and how the expectations are so difficult that men can't cry, that men have to behave a certain way, and I'd love to have your feedback. We certainly had a lot of feedback at the Sundance Institute when we saw that movie, that documentary. But I couldn't help but think about this, and I think it's important that we all think about it and look at and see how it's impacting our young people, our young men, and our young women. I want to skip to the political side now for just a moment, because these are connected. There are many women who feel that perhaps they might want to run for office, but perhaps they're not smart enough or good enough or have a knowledge of the issues and so forth. And I want to dispel some of that today. When you think of women in political office, what are some of the names that come to your mind? Do you think of any? Any faces that come to your mind when you think of women in political office? Who? Raise your hand.
Hillary Clinton.
Okay, Hillary Clinton is one. Okay, yes.
Nancy Pelosi.
Okay.
Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, Elizabeth Warren. A lot of you are probably struggling to think, aren't you? There are not that many. You know, a lot of, if you think of men in political office, you can probably rattle off one after another. And yet, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And so we need to get more visibility with our women in office and have women aspire and be inspired to be part of the table. So why does this matter? Why does it matter that we have more women in political office, in corporate boards, sitting at the table of the corporate boards as well as a dinner table? Why is that important? Do you see any advantage or even disadvantage of that? Yes?
I would say it brings forth diversity and equal representation.
Okay, how does diversity help the whole situation? What does it benefit? How does it add? Yes?
If there aren't some female politicians, a great deal of them, then how can women's rights and women's issues be accurately decided upon by politicians? So that's why I think women in office matter.
All right. Wonderful. Do you think that women and men think differently? You've noticed. I have too. And neither one of them is better than the other. It's just complementary, and it's important that we have men advocating for women as much as women advocating for women. So I'm really glad that we have men in the audience. Thank you so much for being here, because you are certainly part of the solution and the equation. I wanted to pass out some papers to you. I'm going to have you take about 4 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, to draw a picture. But don't worry about your artistic ability, okay? So, Molly, would you pass out those papers for me? There's also magic markers in this green bag if you'd like to take one. If you don't mind giving them back, I'd appreciate it, because I like to use this activity from time to time. I would like you, as you take these papers, think about the following. I'd like you to close your eyes for a minute and picture in your mind what you hope your surroundings will be like, say, in about 10 to 15 years. It's not that far off. But what would you like your environment to be? What would you be hoping for? What would you be thinking and doing? What would your environment like be like? Again, this is what you would hope for you, your life, in about 15 years. Think about this and then depict it on your paper. Do not worry about your artistic ability. But be sure and label things. What would you be thinking? What would you be saying? What would you be doing? 15 years will pass by quickly, just like many of you, as you look back 15 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. What would your environment be like? I'm going to give you a couple minutes to do that, and then I'm going to ask for a couple of victims, volunteers, to tell us what you depicted. This is kind of what you would hope for. And as you go about your life, it's important to think about what you want in the future. Setting goals for yourself and thinking about what you would like to see, where you would like to see yourselves. as soon as someone is ready to share what they wrote, you're going to get extra credit for this. We'll have to talk to your professors, but raise your hand when you're ready. All right, it looks like we have one leader in our group, at least one. Would you stand up and tell us what you wrote, what you depicted on your paper? Feel free to share it. We'd love to see it.
Many people mock me for this idea, but my overriding goal is to move to Montana, live by myself, and raise rabbits. It's counterproductive towards an engineering degree, but I think that's going to give me the financial security in which to accomplish my goal.
All right, that's not exactly what I had in mind, but perfect. If that's your answer, that's very good. Let's hear you.
Hi, I'm Tanya Johnson, the guest speaker today, and I actually have our United States Capitol. I can't draw, but she said don't worry about it. What I have is women winning, attention to the important issues that really impact our lives, active advocacy, go advocate, youth leadership development, speaking internationally and training, everyday people leading in our government.
Okay, thank you. Two very different answers, and both interesting. Thank you. Let's take one more. Who wants to volunteer?
My name is Maritza Lara, and what I see that I could do or would like to do in 15 years is that through health policy and research, I would like to end health disparities. And for this, I draw a couple of people of different races and nationalities. I feel like if we have a diverse workforce and we are able to embrace our differences, we can accomplish this.
What do you think can be accomplished with more diversity?
Me or someone else?
I'd like to give a couple, if you don't mind me addressing this. So when I first was elected to the state legislature, this was in 2000, the very first bill that I spoke on was a bill that was sponsored by Cheryl Allen, Representative Cheryl Allen. And Utah was the only state in the nation at that time that did not license estheticians. Estheticians are professionals that will do, your fingernails, your hair, your skin, those kinds of things. And, you know, they're professionals in the field of beauty, if you will. And we found that Utah wanted to be licensed because there are harsh chemicals, there are sharp tools and so forth that are used in this profession. And so Representative Cheryl Allen was giving her presentation on the floor of the House, and she was explaining the need for estheticians to be licensed because of those reasons I just mentioned. One of the legislators, a male from Utah County, I have to note, stood up with a pair of fingernail clippers and said, "You mean to tell me I need a license to use these?" And that was my first speech on the floor because I could feel my blood pressure rise at that time, thinking, you know, this person has never been to an esthetician, would not know anything about it. And I couldn't help but think at that time how important it is that we have people that have been to an esthetician, that have had those kinds of experiences, and I could give numerous examples of that. Another one example of the importance of having more diversity, and not just women, but we're talking people of color and other kinds of diverse backgrounds. I was on the law enforcement committee for a number of years, the only woman on the law enforcement committee. Guess where all the gun bills went? To that committee. And I happen to know because of my research background that women felt very, very differently about guns than men do. In general, not every woman and not every man feels the same way. But in general, there was about a 20% gap in how women viewed gun bills and gun legislation as opposed to men. And so I would find myself a lone voice in the wilderness oftentimes on those bills. But I knew that I represented the bulk of many of people, men and women, on some of those bills, and it wasn't the views that were presented in the committee. Another example of why we need more diversity was recently, I was in the lieutenant governor's office, and he had his assistant there, Mark Thomas. He's actually head of elections. And I asked him about why it's important to have more diversity, gender diversity, in our legislature. And he said, I'll give you a great example. A few years ago, then-Senator Karen Morgan was giving presenting a bill on the HPV virus. This is a virus that has a vaccine now that can prevent HPV. And the HPV can cause cancer and has caused cancer. Very common HPV is in sexually active people. And so she was presenting her bill on why this should be funded. It would definitely prevent a lot of the cancers that we're experiencing. And there was no woman on the committee, not one. And the discussion evolved into why this should not pass, because it would make women more promiscuous. And not having any women on that committee, there was no one to counter that. And I thought that was another excellent example. And we could give example after example of the importance of having that kind of diversity. I wanted to bring a picture of my grandmother. Now, I'm old, but not that old. My grandmother is the fourth one from the right here. She's the one that seems kind of sassy in this picture. But my grandmother did not have the right to vote. The women were given the right to vote in 1920. And as I look at this picture, she would have been old enough to vote nowadays. But she was not given the right to vote. There was a lot of pain and suffering that went into giving women the right to vote. There were women jailed. There were women giving slop for food in the jail because they had the courage or the audacity, depending on your point of view, to picket the White House. And finally, women were given the right to vote. Now, I hate to see that great work go for naught. Not only should we vote, all of us, and men should vote to help elevate women and vice versa. We all need to vote and to be active. We need to not just vote, but to be active in whatever way you choose to be active. I certainly would love to see more women in the legislature. Do any of you know how many women currently serve in the legislature and what the percentage is? Anybody want to take a guess? No one will hold you to this. You'll still pass. Anybody?
At the state or federal level?
This is at our state legislature. 10 women in the House, 10 out of 75, 6 out of 29 in the Senate. That makes 15%. So, Molly, would you come here for a minute? What does this mean for half of our population in our state? Molly is a good person. She was my intern. So I fabulous intern. What this would mean is I'm going to cover up 85% of Molly's mouth. Okay? Actually, it's a little bit more than that.
It's a big mouth.
That's what it means when women have 15% of the voice in our state legislature. Molly, would you like to answer why we need more women in the state legislature? You've been up there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Can you speak with that?
Because I like to breathe air.
Okay. I think we've demonstrated.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a good sport. Literally, though, if we don't have a better balance with gender, we don't hear 85% of our population. And that means changes in public policy, differences in public policy, because what do women do? This has been my experience, is that women tend to focus on areas where they have had experience. And who do we have in the legislature? Think about who can take 2.5 months off work, Not very many people can. So you have a lot of business owners, farmers and ranchers. We have people whose companies are willing to let them go for 2.5 months. Why? Because they can sponsor legislation that will help their industry. But we don't have stay-at-home moms up there. You don't see it. You don't see, students, young people in the legislature. We don't see teachers. Some of them are retired, but not very many. What we see are business entities and other kinds of people that represent certain kinds of industries. And so what kind of legislation do they pass or sponsor? Women tend to sponsor legislation having to do with public education, health care, air quality, and issues dealing with health. Why is that? That's the realm that most women have been living for many, many years in many cases. And they're interested in those things. So what happens when you have 15% of our legislators who are women? You don't see that kind of change. You don't see that kind of involvement and pushing for bills that are relevant to people. So that is what gender parity, in my mind, would do in our state legislature and nationally as well. The same kind of dismal numbers as we see here are similar across the land, with the exception of a few states. That is why it's important that we look at gender parity in our state legislatures. Let me tell you why else you all should consider running for office, and especially you women. I never thought I would run for office. It never occurred to me, and all of the research shows that women tend to need to be nudged. We don't grow up thinking we're going to be governor someday. I'll tell you an experience that I had when I was young, and I grew up in the 50s and 60s when we didn't have Title IX. But I loved sports. And in my third grade class and my fourth grade class, when they would pair off into two teams, remember that? And they would pick so-and-so to be in the recess team and play at recess. And I'd usually be the only girl picked. And I would play baseball with these boys at recess. But after school, we would go over to the little baseball park. And I remember this so vividly, looking through the chain link fence like this, watching these very boys that I used to play with a few hours ago at recess, but wouldn't think of asking to play on the boys' baseball team. And in high school, similarly, there were not a lot of offerings for women then. I would have loved to have played any of them, really. But I remember going with a girlfriend of mine, and we went to the principal and asked if we could have a girls' football team. And what he said to me, I'll never forget, "You can. However, you can't have any of our coaches. You won't have any equipment. You won't have any supervision. But sure, you guys, you women, you girls can go out and play football if you want." We wanted to play our rival. So we did. We played tackle. We had no equipment. We had a broken clavicle, and we had a broken leg. But we played. But those kinds of opportunities would be so greatly helped if we had more women at the table in making those kinds of policy decisions. And those are just a few. My daughters were lucky enough to play basketball in high school. And part of me I was just darn jealous, but glad for them that they could do it. But I would have loved to have had that opportunity. And now girls do. But are we making any headway in our corporate boards, in our legislatures? We have got to do better, because frankly, we'll do better if we have more women. I've been doing a lot of reading in my new position. I have a position now that's a brand new organization called the Women's Leadership Institute. This is an organization that was the brainchild and vision of some of our top business leaders in the state of Utah. Utah does not do well with the number of women in our legislature or the number of women sitting at corporate board tables. And we need to do better. Why? Because it's great for business. All of the research shows that when you have a lot of women at the table, that your numbers improve, that the innovative firms with more women at the top are more profitable, that when there's more diversity, there are more customers, there's more revenue, there's more market share, and more profits. And all of the research has shown that. So I think it's important that we as women are not shrill about this. We don't push people around to get there. Some people might disagree with that, and I've talked to some women that are really, frankly, would love to do more quickly with that tone. I believe that we need to work with men as advocates to elevate the stature of female leadership in our state, not to push men aside, but to work with them and have them work with women as advocates for women, because it's good for families, it's good for business, it's good for our state, it's good for our communities. And until we can communicate that and educate people about the benefits, that we're missing an opportunity to engage half of our population. Now, I would like to ask you some questions, and then we'll do some Q&As. What can you do to help instigate change? Frankly, as I look at I have five granddaughters, and one of them's in high school, ready to go off to college, and the smallest one was just born 6 months ago. And I look at them and wonder what life will be like for them. I think that's true of any parent or grandparent, and that's the way it should be. We're hoping that things will be great for them. But what can we do now to instigate this kind of change and understanding to help elevate the stature of female leadership? Do you all understand why it's important? What can you do as a young person to instigate change? I'd like to hear from this side of the room. Anybody? What are some things that you could do in the next year? Yes.
As a girl, as a girl from Cambodia, I have a strong desire to be involved in social and political field. And growing up, I could see women, housewives, including my mom, and it inspires me to want to learn as much as possible, to gain as much qualification to be a leader, to show other women that, hey, we can do it. And it starts with me. I know that, and I took that upon myself. That is my mission, to influence and to inspire my sister, my nieces in the future. So besides preparing myself to be a leader is to have a positive influence on the girls around me.
You are a mentor. You are a mentor, and you are a leader. Sometimes it's just speaking out and not taking no. Inspiring someone. This past year, I usually pick female interns for a reason, because I want to be a mentor to them. And this last year was the first time I heard this answer. I said to Sylvie, who was my intern, I said, and this is what I always said to my prospective interns, I want this to be such a great experience for you, magical, so that someday you will want to run for office. And Sylvie goes, oh, I plan to. I'm like, okay, you're my intern. I think maybe the younger generation that are coming in now are expecting to do that. And that thrills me, that women in particular can see that as something that they aspire to do. Politics is really not very boring. I'm surprised. You know, some people think it is, and it's just, you know, you're in a kind of a ring where you're fighting each other all the time. It is not like that. I never had a bad experience as a woman in the legislature, never, in 14 years. It was a great experience. And I think people appreciated having more women. We just need more of women. We need more women there. It has to be something that women feel like they're comfortable doing. You do not have to know anything, obviously, when you run for office. You know, look what's happening up there. But for some reason, women think differently about that. They worry about raising money. That is easily achievable, too. There are ways to do it. It is very achievable for each one of you to run for office. I would love to give you ideas on how to do that. Women, in order to level the playing field, we need to learn to accept criticism. Don't be afraid to be criticized. Women oftentimes are in different kinds of leadership positions. Accept criticism that's positive criticism and constructive criticism. We can all do better, but women tend to be afraid of that oftentimes. We need to stop apologizing. How often do we hear that? Women are constantly saying, I'm sorry. And we don't need to apologize unless there's a reason for it. We need to change the tone of our voice. We don't need to speak differently. Just be yourself. Speak confidently. You know, it's important. You deserve a seat at the table, not as the secretary taking minutes. You deserve to be the CEO, the person in charge, as much as any man. And we also need to do a better job of learning how to negotiate. You know, you're talking about salaries, whether you're talking about contracts, whatever it is we're talking about, learn how to negotiate. Now, there are four things I'd like to finish with, and then I will take your questions, and I'm not sure how much time we have left. All of you, everybody in this room, I just finished a large study in my other job before I had this one as a researcher, where I interviewed CEOs and COOs and HR people, mostly in high-tech industry here in the state of Utah. What is it that they're looking for of their graduates, and where are the deficiencies? There are four, and I want you to write these down, because if you can hone these skills, you will have no trouble finding and keeping a job. Number one, the ability to speak, oral communication, the ability to present in front of teams. We are working in teams nowadays. We are not working in cubicles anymore. We're working in teams, in open settings. You go to Goldman Sachs, you go to Vivint, you go to so many of these Adobe, and you will see people sitting open, and they're working in teams. Number two, written communication. Learn to spell. Learn to to be grammatically correct. Learn to express yourself in an effective way. Take minutes, if you will, in a meeting you're in, and try and convey it as if you were a reporter. I'm grateful I have a degree in journalism. That helped me so much to be a writer. And writing has helped me in every position. Learn to write. Learn to communicate. I heard so many stories from these CEOs about just sending an email and not being able to even understand what the meaning of the email was. Critical thinking. Learn to be creative. As you drive down the street, look at the signs and think, could there be a different method of building that sign? You know, anything you see, think of a different way than what it is and why it wasn't that way. Learn to be creative, a creative thinker. Take classes in art, music, any kind of the performing arts is really great for right-left brain integration. We're losing that in our schools, and it's harming our kids. They're not as creative as they used to be. But we are a country of innovation and creativity, and we're losing that. And critical thinking is really, really important. So I would like to open this up to, did I not get the fourth one? Oh, okay, I'm going to think of it in a minute, critical thinking. I would like to open this up to all of you now to have questions of me, if you have any, and if you have any advice for me, I'd love it, as I go about working in the realm of women's leadership and how we can inspire people and elevate the stature of women in the state of Utah.
I know that you said that you don't ever see, that you don't really see students up in the legislature representing the younger generation, but how do you feel that the general public would feel about a student trying to run for something in the legislature?
Oh, my goodness. It would be great. You know, you have to be 25 to run for the legislature. But I think we're looking for kind of that inspired young, you know, looking for that kind of leadership with our young people. And I really think that this generation is more willing to do that. Don't let older people scare you. We know a lot less than you do. I mean, haven't you found that to be the case? It would be, I think, warmly received, depending on where you live. Anybody else? Go ahead. Thank you for participating.
Made mention earlier that you're into market research, and particularly towards women's studies. Have you ever thought about looking at other cultures and societies and seeing what social economical factors drove their women equality or gender equality, and if those things can be induced in our culture?
Very good question. Yes, there have been many studies on that, and where you find that women have quality health care and child care, you see a much greater parity in women being involved, or you have maternity and paternity leave policies that are friendly to families, unlike here. You know, you don't see those. They're rare here. So the research that I've read shows that men should take advantage of their paternity leave. It's important. It sets a precedence. It makes them closer to their children. So I definitely think there are, unfortunately, you have some political leanings here and other places where the views are that women, women's role is in the home, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of women who choose that. There are other women who choose not to do that, but balance home life with their career life. And it's a big battle. It's a problem for women. It's a challenge for women to not, you know, drop their children off in daycare setting or childcare, and not feel guilty about doing that. It's a challenge for women. I hope men understand that.
So creative thinking and kind of creative direction is something that I'm really passionate about, and I just want to know your thoughts on, like, how you would suggest we as, like, a student body, or we as just, like, individuals can inspire that sort of change where we are becoming more creative individuals, and we're kind of, like, teaching our younger brothers and sisters and, like, the coming generation, like, the importance of creativity in all things?
That's a really great question, too. I would say get them away from the TV. You know, if you have brothers and sisters, get them away from their video games and start talking, asking questions. Or if you're in the car with them, ask them questions about why. Start with why. Why is, you know, why are these leaves turning brown and orange and so forth in the fall? You know, what causes that? Help them, you know, through that. I'm a big believer of the arts, because the arts have proven that that children can be more critically thinking and be more creative. And so one of the studies that I did was for the Beverly Taylor Sorensen Arts Program, and I interviewed many arts specialists throughout the state of Utah. And what I learned from that absolutely convinced me of how important the arts are, but also how important they are in helping children understand why it's important to be a good audience. You know, if you're the bear in the school play, you know what it's like if someone's rude to you. So you have lived that. Now you know how to be a good audience member. Mm-hmm. You also know that there are other students or other kids your age that are talented, and you learn to respect them. I remember there was one in Davis County that I was interviewing, and they were telling me about this little boy that had albinism and would have been mocked and made fun of in many other settings, but he became one of the leads in their school play. And after that, everybody accepted him because he did such a great job. And so that it helps people become more accepting, and there's a lot of different spillover benefits to that. So I'm a big believer in that.
Hi, my name is Jessica Arthurs, and I'm currently majoring in political science, and I hope to pursue a long-term career in politics in the United States government. I was wondering what you thought some measures could be taken at, like, a community or local level at my age. I'm 19. And how you thought I could maybe get involved in my community politically right now.
Oh, yes. Okay. There are many different levels that they do have that run for the city council. Okay? That's a wonderful way to start. Find out some issues that are really important to you. Go to your school community councils. Every school has a community council, and it's made up of the principal and a couple of teachers, but most of them are patrons in that district and parents. Go to those and find out where your passion is. That's the important thing. Is if you're interested in improving reading, for instance, in K-3, which is a big push for many, it's important to do that. Go read in your local school. Go to the refugee. I mean, if anybody's ever done that, I know the Granite School District had one. I think they've moved it, but refugees, helping them learn English. Brilliant people. It's just language is a barrier for so many. There's nothing that makes you feel better than doing that. There are so many opportunities out there. So I think find your passion about what interests you and what makes you feel good, and then you're going to, you won't have to worry about, you know, what you want to run for. You'll see where the needs are, and you'll want to make changes in policy.
Hi, my name is Cindy Chen. I'm actually a music student, so I love hearing you talk about creativity and how that influences creative thinking and critical thinking. Something that I think, I guess my question is, we hear a lot about how students need to learn more of this and learn more of that. Like, how would you speak to audiences, or on a policy level, how do you balance that, I guess, advocacy for the arts and education while still remaining? I just feel like we're going to ask a lot from future students for what we're teaching them. So how do you balance that?
And by the way, I just thought of the fourth one. It's problem solving. So forgive me. Again, here is where you see a huge gender gap in understanding the importance of creative thinking. Women tend to be more often in the schools, so they're seeing the benefit of having artwork on the walls and so forth, and how it transfers to increasing, you know, reading ability and so forth. How do we advocate for it? Well, there are a number of advocates for it, but I would get, once the PTA found out that there would be cuts in the arts programs, I got more emails on that than just about anything, but it was almost exclusively from women, almost exclusively. But I would get 150 a day on don't cut the arts programs in our schools, but they do, because there are many policymakers that don't understand and don't see the benefit. They're not bad people. They just don't see the benefits of that. So it's advocacy by people like you that write, you know, letters to the editor and that appear in the legislature and advocate for those kinds of things. It's making your voice heard. Remember the tape? Let's take the tape off. That's what we need to do.
And we'll be wrapping up soon. We have time for one or two more questions, so just so you know. I was just wondering what got you involved in politics. What made you decide to run for office? What interested you about the public policy world?
Oh, thank you. I get that question a lot. Well, I was a focus group moderator for about 35 years. And so I would listen to people for a living. That's what I did all over the country. But when I would do focus groups in Utah, I would often hear people say, why won't the legislature listen to us about funding our schools? I would hear that over and over. And it kind of stuck with me. And then I got, in those days, it was a fax. You guys know what faxes are. And a phone call from then Attorney General Jan Graham, who I had done focus groups for. And she said, Pat, you really need to run for the legislature. And she sent me a fax of the current representative in my area, completely opposite of how I would vote on things. And she called me once a day for 2 weeks. Please run. And finally, I just said yes, just to get her off my back, very honestly. But I have never regretted it. It has opened doors for me. It has given me confidence. When you can't straddle a fence in politics. You can say you cannot know everything. You don't have to know everything, but you have to be involved and engaged. And so you really find out who you are. That is what I would say. A lot of people search who they are through their whole lives. I kind of know who I am now because of the legislature. And it opens doors like crazy to be on boards. I mean, they want a Democrat, a woman, you know, someone that's been in the legislature, a businesswoman. Because of my profile, it's not me that they want. It's the profile. But then once you're on a board, they can see what you can do and the contributions that you can make. So it opens doors for you. The other thing the legislature did for me is it helped me learn the system. When my dad was very ill, I knew where to call because I'd been on the Health and Human Services Committee. I knew what services were out there, you know, not because of my position, but I knew the structure. That is so valuable for people. Most people don't know who to call, what to do if they have substance abuse in their family or they can't get a mortgage or you name it. I knew that because of the experiences I had. That is so valuable to know that. And more advantages, by the way. I could go on.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for all of your questions, and I hope you all can join me in thanking Senator Patricia Jones.